Chapter 23. Sherman was half awake, holding his fist in his hand, cursing at himself as his knuckles throbbed. He'd been having a nightmare, the intensity of which he hadn't experienced since he was a kid. The strain of the situation on Amir was grating on him, at least in his subconscious. Fighting Rupak, that was the easy part. He almost preferred to get right back into it. He knew what to do in combat, knew where to put his men, how to destroy the enemy. But all of this, building a new civilization without any assurances that more help would be on the way, having lost those who were critical to the mission, not only losing good men, but losing their skills as well. It didn't make this situation impossible, but it did threaten to overwhelm you with a feeling of how colossally daunting the prospects of survival were. In the dream, he had arrived on Amir with 2nd Platoon landing in Camp Ohio. It was perfect in the dream, not the worn-down collection of hovels that now stood. Except that when he went inside the buildings, he found the skeletal remains of his men from 1st Platoon. Sergeant 1st Class Soto, Sergeant Harmon, Tran. Everyone dead, their uniforms in dusty tatters, bones bleached white, mouths agape, and a never-ending spectral laugh. Sherman had scrambled outside only to find the rest now dead too. He was the last one living. The only man alive anywhere. Then the claw-like skeletal fingers reached for him, trying to claim him as their own. He fought, swinging wildly, striking the wall of his bunk and waking, fortunate not to have broken a bone in his hand. He let out a breath. He knew the alarm he'd set wasn't going to go off for a while yet, but wondered if it was best to just get up and get after it anyway. He didn't want to take the risk of venturing back into the dream. The decision was made for him when Captain Bosa pinged his implant.
Yes, sir. I spoke with Mr. Reach. We need to talk.
Roger, I'll be at the array in 15. No need for face-to-face.
Roger.
Primary takeaway is this. There are approximately 2,000 colonists. Sherman sat up.
We can't adequately house that many at the camp, sir.
No, we can't. And Mr. Reach hasn't yet gotten commitment that they are willing to move, but they are willing to listen. Our plan at this time is to index supplies on hand and assist in fortifying Camp Muir until we have finished making adequate preparations at Ohio. That made sense. There was no other choice. Not with so many people.
Was the AI of much use, Captain?
According to Alexa, the AI may be something of a liability. Evidently, he talks like he learned English from watching 1980s action movies. Add that to the list of things Sherman wasn't expecting to hear in the past 48 hours.
Roger, sir. What do you need from me?
I want you to focus on keeping Rupak busy. That means increased patrols, coordinated with Alexa. Find Rupak and hammer them wherever they are. Make them think twice about showing their face anywhere near our two camps.
Sherman smiled. This was something he could handle.
Yes, sir. I'll get it done.
I know you will.
Hatchet out.
Sherman felt freshly invigorated. As he dressed, he thought of how to best tackle the task before him. With all assets from the Boon now available to him, the answer became readily apparent. The Boon had delivered all four of its badgers, but so far, Badger 1, protecting the southern perimeter of the camp, was the only one to have engaged the enemy. That was about to change.
Sergeant Harmon, he transmitted to his squad leader.
Yes, sir.
Get Morales over to sit in your Badger. I want 1st Squad and 2nd Squad to hustle up and meet me at Badger 2. We're going hunting.
Roger that.
The approval in Harmon's voice was unmistakable. Sherman's ad hoc crew included a pair of Space Force E-1s set to drive the two Badgers. The vehicle had the ability to self-drive, but Sherman felt more comfortable with a human behind the wheel. Two senior spacers manned the weapons equipment and onboard sensor arrays, and 1st and 2nd squads rode in back, ready to deploy as needed. Sherman observed the progress remotely, plugged into the cockpit cabin of Badger 2, his battle board awash with more information than he knew what to do with. He'd wanted to go on patrol, but hadn't lobbied for it. There was no way Captain Bosa would allow an officer to leave the wire.
Officers were in short supply, and no one else was coming through the stars to help them. They would need to make do with what they had. Sergeant Harmon represented some of the best of what they had. That was another reason for Sherman to stay behind. By leading the patrol, Harmon would have a chance to prove that he was indeed officer material, as Sherman was confident he was. There was little to see for the first 90 minutes of the patrol, other than the forest itself. The badgers pushed over saplings with ease, finding a natural, albeit winding, path through the trees. This route would likely be made into a road as the camp expanded.
"Still no sign of Rupak," Sergeant Harmon reported. "If they're out there, they're smart enough to hide."
"Roger," acknowledged Sherman. "Stay frosty. 01 out."
The lieutenant didn't expect Rupak to show themselves and charge the badgers outright. Their tactic, since being denied Camp Ohio, had been more like the Chinese human wave assaults of the Korean War. In lesser numbers, of course. It was a far cry from what Sherman and his platoon had experienced in fighting Rupak regulars on Earth. That had been a disciplined and dangerous army, a legitimate threat to a United States that had watched so many of its allies opt to sit on the sidelines until it was too late. Sherman sometimes wondered what might have happened had the world's reaction to Rupak been more unified. Had politicians listened to the generals who had clear and actionable accounts of what was happening on the ground? But that wasn't how it went. And now, none of that mattered.
"Picking up contacts on the sensors," Harmon reported over comm. "Square A3.
Sherman checked his battle board, watching the same sensor data the Badger was showing Sergeant Harmon. It was detecting motion, something big enough to hold a rifle. It was still 100 meters away at least, a testament to the capability of the Badger's sensor package. The convoy slowed, the target area straight ahead.
"Sergeant, do any of your men have visuals?"
"Negative. We're screened by heavy brush."
Sherman knew Harmon was waiting for orders. There were a few ways to go about this. He decided to put the man to the test.
"Roger. How do you want to handle, Sergeant?"
"Me, sir?"
"Roger.
Verify we have no friendlies in the area, and then light him up with the Badger. Firing solution is already locked in place."
Sherman smiled. Another man might have dismounted and sent the Rangers to investigate, but the hell with that. This wasn't a hearts and minds mission, and they weren't rolling into a borderline neighborhood with equal parts friend and foe. They had a magnificent piece of firepower and territory Rupak had attacked from. So long as they could verify it wasn't a friendly target, Sherman fully supported using the Badger's guns.
"Wait one while I call it in. 01 out."
Bosa confirmed immediately that he'd sent no patrols to the location. Reach took a bit longer, as he first had to confirm with the locals that they didn't have a scouting or hunting party in the region.
"Sergeant, confirmed no Rangers patrolling the AO. Confirmed no native parties from Camp Muir. Over."
"Roger. Engaging. Out."
The Badger's guns ripped through the forest a moment later. Sherman heard them over the battle board's wireless connection and then heard the faint ghost-like banging of the vehicle's 30-millimeter guns drift into camp. 10 seconds of fury, and it was over. Sherman watched the sensors while waiting for Harmon's report. There were no longer any signs of life, and the 2 40-millimeter grenades that soon burst above the target area ensured that if there were any Rupaks lucky enough to get down and avoid the guns, they ran out of luck before the day ended.
"No movement," Harmon reported. "Approaching the target zone. We'll inspect with first squad. Out."
The two Badgers motored toward the carnage, wisps of smoke issuing from the twin MGs as they came to a halt 20 meters in front of the now ruined target area. First squad poured out of Badger 2, with Sergeant Harmon among them. Sherman watched through Harmon's camera as they moved stealthily toward the objective. There was a tightness in Sherman's chest, and he felt a rush of anxiety. His men were capable, but he'd been used to deploying with them, close to the action.
"I can smell blood," Harmon transmitted. "We got the—"
"Whoa."
The sergeant reared back as a creature charged from the brush, running on a gimpy leg. It was out and gone in a flash, but Sherman spotted the equine-like features and the feathered tail and realized this was the same species Reach had seen before. The Rangers moved in closer, not letting the surprise break their concentration. Then, as one, they relaxed.
"Holy shit, Sarge," said Private Robinson. "That almost gave me a heart attack."
"Be advised, LT," Harmon transmitted. "We just killed a bunch of those things Fifth Squad saw the other night."
"No Rupak?" Sherman asked.
"Negative. Just the feathered horse things."
One of the men asked Sergeant Harmon something that Sherman couldn't quite make out.
"LT, the boys want to know if we can bring these back to camp. See how they compare to MREs."
Sherman smiled. "As long as they're willing to pick out the shrapnel and let the docs verify it won't kill them, be my guest.
Can't be any worse than those damn veggie burgers. M4s and a surplus of the old Menu 12. How long have those been sitting in the warehouse? I swear, LT, somebody back on Earth hated us."
"Roger," Sherman said with a smile. "Out."